This is Mae Bressel, and it's side two, February 16th, 1979, and it's tape number 376. I want to ask questions on this side about Rockefeller and some major decisions that were made in a political nature, the politics of the murders of these people, and that's why I went in at length about Mr. Gumbel and what he observed in Germany. Dr. Michael Bodden is the chief medical examiner of New York City. And Dr. Bodden is also the man who represented the House Select Committee on Assassinations, the medical team. There was a large medical team, and he spoke and testified for them. And he was handpicked by G. Robert Blakey, who worked again with Mo Dalitz as a character witness in the La Costa case. And he represented or spoke up for him in the charges of organized crime, the links to organized crime. I've gone into that, and we've done other tapes on that matter. But Dr. Michael Bodden is now chief medical examiner in New York City. And with that power of working with the CIA and with people who have links to organized crime, such as G. Robert Blakey, and important justice positions, just as in Nazi Germany, covering up the murder of the President of the United States, that alone would tell you where Mr. G. Robert Blakey is, and Dr. Michael Bodden. He has the decision in New York whether to do autopsies and gives the approval for cremations. But it's very interesting. Dr. Michael Bodden, the chief medical examiner of New York City, was in San Diego, just where La Costa is, and the same power base that Evel Younger has that I talked about earlier with La Costa down there. I don't have any link that Dr. Michael Bodden was at La Costa in San Diego that weekend. I don't know what he was doing. I know at the time that John Kennedy was killed, Clay Shaw from New Orleans was in San Francisco. And when Jim Garrison arrested him a few years later as part of the conspiracy, he said, well, I was off in San Francisco, and they checked it out, and he had arranged to be there on that day and have a luncheon as part of his international trademark work. And I think it is in the realm of these huge conspiracies, which always send these people to the funniest places. Bodden wasn't skiing in Colorado or up in Montana or hiking somewhere. He was down, whatever he was doing, he was in San Diego when Nelson Rockefeller, the former vice president and the governor of that state for four different terms, was killed. And over the telephone, he talked to Dr. Ernest Esikoff. And Dr. Esikoff was the man who ordered the cremation of the body, or said that the family gave him the circumstances to cremate. Esikoff responded as in terms of the autopsy and the cremation, and he said that he checked with the family and that they refused the autopsy. And what Esikoff said is that the Rockefellers have the absolute right. We have no right to order it. We're not busybodies, Esikoff said. Families have rights too. And with that, the service was supposed to be on Monday, and then he was quickly cremated, noted by all the news, on Sunday. Now, I just want to ask this question because this is a question which I'm sure came up in Germany. And if I don't run through the 1,000 questions I want to ask you and I just stay with 4, maybe I should go slower and ask these questions. Does a family have the right to say no autopsy or yes, cremate, if there are circumstances where murder could have been involved? If Rockefeller had no history of heart condition, if he'd only been to a doctor 3 times in 20 years, if he was at the school that afternoon having a jolly good time, and I saw him and taped a show on Phil Donahue a couple weeks ago where he looked like he had 30 more years to go, like he said he lived to be 100, like his grandfather. When he's political, when you've had 400 political assassinations in Germany, when we're having an election in 1980, and he was controversial, he was a thorn in the side of the Republicans, they'd be damn glad to not have him around when they meet in Detroit the next time, in the same Detroit where the Ford Motor Company came that financed and created not only the story of the Elders of Prodigals of Zion and the anti-Semitism around the world, the modern anti-Semitism, but financed Hitler right down to the last bottom dollar. That's the Detroit, Michigan, where the next Republican conventions will be. But let's not digress. Dr. Esikoff said that the family, when they refuse it, we're not busy bodies. Now, if somebody dies of a heart attack and is not attended by a doctor, such as Adlai Stevenson or J. Edgar Hoover or William Harvey or Sheffield Edwards, and I can list on and on, the ones that weren't shot through the mouth or through the head that died of these heart attacks, when the intelligence community said they had the substances that they could just put a drop on your coat and it goes through your clothing and you die of a heart attack, it gets into the bloodstreams, or you open up a lighter and run away and there's a poison that comes out and you die of a heart attack, when you have a man with no history of heart disease and one after the other continuous death and murders that only serve one side, and that is extreme right wing, the proportion of people having major heart attacks from the leaders of the Republican Party that works with the defense agencies, the Defense Industry Security Command, or the Defense Intelligence Agency. They're very small. I don't know where these people are. So Dr. Esikoff gives the remark, we have a right to let the family make decisions. He says that's their absolute right, and I challenge that, and I think you should challenge that. And I think you should ask your friends, if families have the right to know when to cremate and when to have autopsies, when they're public officials and they're not under the care of a physician. Now, New York Governor Kerry took this position. He says, I'm going to take an official hands-off attitude to this case. Kerry was asked why there was no medical help for the former vice president for 1 hour. And remember, the recipients and the liars are inheriting a lot of money. Meghan Marshak inherited $45,000 clear on that apartment, and Mr. Murrow got $30,000. These people that lied and covered up also inherited a lot of money. But Governor Kerry said it is serious, but it isn't necessarily criminal negligence. It's a family matter. I know of nothing requiring an investigation. I'm not the mayor nor the district attorney. And then the New York Post had an article, Two Mystery Women in Rocky's Death. Why is there a mystery? And then it says a crew of curtain of secrecy. There's a curtain of secrecy around them. There's mystery, there's secrecy, there's a walkie-talkie, the Farthest Hospital, an early cremation, a series of 12 or 14 major lies about what happened. But getting back to the governor of the state, it isn't criminal negligence, it's a family matter. Now, if that precedence takes over, that's like there's a family in Maryland, CIA woman, whose one younger son killed the younger brother and buried him in the backyard, and he was acquitted. He'll make a good agent years from now. Rumors of other public officials, one in particular, who killed his father. Maybe you know who I'm thinking of. Earl Warren in Bakersfield. The kid will make a good head of the CIA someday, this boy in Maryland right now. But now I don't want to digress too far. The point being that I don't think it's a family matter when these discrepancies take place. We have a right to know whether the candidates that are selected for us in any year, 1964, 68, 72, 76, 80, on, are done because somebody was murdered. I call that the murder, the bullets, or blackmail syndrome. In this case, it's the blackmail, because what they have on Rockefeller and that house over there will keep them quiet. Now, in all of these assassination cases that are direct murders, I was told by a man, I think I had on KLRB a couple of years ago, who called me one night that he had murdered 10 people for the CIA. And the chain of command, if you don't have that tape, or if I don't have it on a tape, remind me and I'll do it for you later. But it begins with a decision in Washington on who to kill. Defense Department, agencies, Pentagon, national security agencies, whatever. Whichever agency has the ultimate power, which I believe in terms of national security is the Defense Department, and then to the CIA and the National Security Council. And it begins by having a phone call to a house, or a house of prostitution, or a house where women live. These women occupy this house, and a man phones that house out of the city, the one that he mentioned, was that the instruction first went to Salt Lake City, then went to a house in Chicago. But I'm sure they have them all over the country. And then the women give an instruction, a woman that he asked for, like Mary gives an instruction. And then he tells them through code what city. And then he goes to either the airport or the Greyhound box. And in that locker, general delivery, he picks up a letter and it has a key number. And through a code, he knows which location the key opens. And then there's a book on the person he's to kill with all their characteristics and when they come and go and what they do and their personal habits. Well, here is Rocky coming at 9 o'clock at night from his home. He's had dinner with his wife and two sons and spent the day with them. So I guess they're saturated as a family, and he decides he'll work on his art book, and he gets over there at 9 o'clock, and about 9:05, he calls Megan and says, come on down. Now, I asked the question about Rockefeller. Did he know too much? I listed some motives on the other tapes. And I'm wondering if the motive for covering this whole thing up is, could that location, that co-op next door, be a front for the Central Intelligence Agency or the Defense Department that Rockefeller used for defense? And that's why they have to cover this from the top down. The district attorney, the governor, the mayor. As a matter of fact, I want you to look at the articles coming over on this story. I outlined all of them that have come out in the last 3 weeks. And I noticed a predominance of Associated Press articles or directly from the Examiner, Reporter in Washington, or the New York Times or the New York Post. I haven't seen any UPI stories on Rockefeller, United Press International. Correct me if I'm wrong, but I'm just wondering. And in California, there is nothing in the papers. There's one little article, maybe every 4 or 5 days, because don't forget, this is Reagan country. This is the area Megan Marshak worked in Van Nuys. She's from Encino, California. Dr. Bond was down in San Diego. Ronald Reagan's base is California. And the California papers aren't having anything about the Rockefeller death. Just left it enough to let you know that it's a girly show, and that's all. And there's two possibilities, or they blend together. That house that they call a cooperative that Rocky had, was this used for the CIA? You see, Rockefeller had large offices at Rockefeller Center on the 54th floor. It was on Rockefeller Center. And that has elevator security guards, and he's very protected when he goes there. And there's no reason he can't do his work there. Then he has an office on 54th Street that he used when he was a governor. And around the corner, on 55th Street, and around the corner on 54th Street, he has another office which connects back to back. But he's not doing anything now in public office, so the governor office could be used for the art collection. But there's an entryway from 55th to 54th. So if a chauffeur leaves somebody off to see the governor on 55th Street, he could be up in paradise over on 54th Street at this little cooperative where these women are. And was this a place that entertained public officials? Megan Marshak, was the hostess at a party when 28 ambassadors were there at his estate. And the question is, was this a CIA safe house that went on all along for national security reasons, which was rented under the name of Rockefeller, that one apartment, two doors down? Or was it where he personally fixed up ambassadors and people that visited New York City business contracts? That's how Howard Hughes got his contracts, fixing up all the military with various women. And then he had them, he not only blackmailed them, but he could seduce them and get these huge contracts. That is public record with his PR man, Johnny Meyer, how he started his making the weapons contracts and becoming a billionaire in that field, in addition to the oil tool bit. But this house had some purpose. Why did Rocky buy that cooperative? As I say, he had one piece on 54th, one on 55th, and then he has a controlling interest of who buys in, and his wife passes who goes in. And I think we have to ask more about those offices. And then Megan Marshak was supposed to have hired the staff for him on 54th Street. Think how convenient. Two places, two five-story houses. I mean, that's 10 floors back-to-back with secret entrance, and then a place two doors down besides. A lot more had to go on in those three buildings that we can ever imagine. And it had to be, I think, government-related. I think it had to be what they call national security. I think it had to do with visiting dignitaries. Megan was on 24-hour call Rocky wasn't available that much, 24-hour call with a wife and two teenage kids. Did she go to the airport to meet people? Did she fix them up? I'm asking the question. I don't know. We have to ask these questions. Did she take them to the theater to dinner and then they got fixed up later? What was that house used for? What were the three houses used for? He had an apartment on 62nd Street and 5th Avenue. That's where Rockefeller's other house is. And then he had other houses in the country, a Japanese house and his large house on the estate, and he had two in Washington. And all the time, these things are going on. And that's, even for a Rockefeller, that's a lot of expensive property and staff, unless they weren't really the staff. And again, as I put on the Paisley tapes, if some of you don't have those, you can get them on John Paisley, the missing CIA man. His wife, Mary Ann Paisley, took orders from Catherine Hart from the CIA, another woman. And as soon as Megan was with Rockefeller and Rocky was dead, she picks up the phone and calls Panchita. Was that to tell Panchita that she had done her job? Was she to check in that it was completed, that she should come down now that he's dead? Because when she came down and she was asked, was Rockefeller dead? This is Panchita Pierce, that a television woman who would have poise, would have know-how or clout, acting training, and so forth. When they asked her, was Rockefeller dead? When you came there, she said, I don't know. Was he dead or alive? She said, I don't know. What did she do? She simply left her apartment, where she said she put on her clothing at 10:50 on a Saturday night, came down, picked up a phone, 911, called the emergency, and walked out. She didn't say, is he dead or alive? She says she didn't know. And she was under the pay of Rockefeller at one time, and she was Meghan Marshak's best friend, and leaves her alone with a man who is A, either dying, or B, dead, and walks out to her apartment and goes back upstairs. Now, that is impossible. That is a total impossible arrangement unless they work for the Defense Department and they had been on the control of Rockefeller, Megan, for 4 years, because she was his secretary when he was head of the Rockefeller Committee to investigate the assassinations of foreign leaders. She helped write his speeches. Did she write the press reports for the news on the Rockefeller Committee? What was her role with the media? This is a woman who worked with the Associated Press 6 months and then goes to the Vice President of the United States at a time when he's investigating illegal CIA activities. And think of that, because at the time of Watergate, when Richard Nixon, as the President of the United States, was himself being illegally bugged all the time. I mean, some of the machines he knew that were going, but his information on his desk was stolen by a Yeoman Redford and taken to Admiral Moore, who was Secretary of the Navy, and Nixon had to reappoint him as Secretary of the Navy. And there was a window drop of paint that a bird put there that the CIA had that plants these listening devices. The President of the United States was under surveillance all the time he was President of the United States until Watergate, when they shoot him out and made ready for the next stage. And in came General Haig temporarily and Rockefeller and Ford. But Ford was on the Warren Commission and he became the vice president. Then under him, he had Nelson Rockefeller. And Nelson Rockefeller was investigating the Kennedy assassination and the other assassination just superficially, when he had David Belin, his head attorney, who was the attorney for the Warren Commission, working for the Rockefeller Committee. A woman from California, 21 years old. 21 years old. Think of Terry Buford working for Jim Jones, who knows all about the drugs, the murders, the $26 million, and they send this little innocent chick to London to open up bank accounts in Switzerland and France and Panama and Bahamas. 14 banks in $26 million. And this little, looks like a little hippie, a little Manson family member, you know, a kid off Haight-Ashbury. And nothing. And out comes Megan Marshak from California, from Encina. What radio training did she have? Where did she learn her newspaper work? What college did she go to? Where did she graduate from? What was her experience before the Associated Press hired her? Do you know how hard it would be at the time that Watergate is coming down and the President of the United States is out and Agnew has been kicked out and in come Ford and Vice President Rockefeller, do you know how hard it would be to get a job during those years, 4 years ago, or any time today, or any time for Associated Press? It was Gerald Ford at the Warren Commission in January 21st meeting in 1964 when the subject came up, how are we going to handle the newspaper reports of what we're investigating? And Gerald Ford said, well, gentlemen, I can handle the AP and the UPI, the Associated Press and the United Press International. And as soon as he said that, and they had trouble with some people, they mentioned Joe Jostin and Thomas Buchanan and Mark Lane, they said, well, let's just call in the Associated Press and the United Press and say, what do you have? And get them, the Warren Commission was to call them in, and they would continue the covering up. So the Associated Press, I can handle the AP. Do they have chicks that handle this? Was Marshak a plant for 4 years, such as Mary Jo Kopechne? At the time, she was inside the Ted Kennedy camp and Robert Kennedy. They called her the boiler room girls. But she worked for George Smathers, as I've said before on tapes, and Bebe Rebozo's pal and Nixon's pal. And she was at that partying, only this time she died. In this particular case, Megan lived. But I think even just the question, if we have to use the whole side of this tape, what was that house used for? Government operations, were they caught in one of their government operations with one of their government agents? And for that reason, they have to cover up this whole thing. They get rid of Rocky, but they get him in a way that he can't be exposed, because not only was he with the chick who was in various types of gowns, whichever one you want to choose, but the house and the unnatural way with which a newspaper woman calls another woman and says, come on down, he's had a heart attack. She said, the governor's had a heart attack. She identified him by name, Governor Rockefeller, the Vice President Rockefeller. She said he had a heart attack. She named the condition. And she calls her friend, who gets dressed, and she says, call the chauffeur and tell him. And Mr. Chauffeur is parked around the corner on 55th. Why would Megan Marshak say, notify the chauffeur? Did she hire that staff, too? Were they under her employee? The chauffeur didn't appear on the scene. He wasn't there when the police came. He wasn't there when the ambulance was there. He hasn't been seen since that time. He showed up at the hospital later. But who did he carry to the hospital? Was it Dr. Esikoff? Were the women the ones that called Esikoff? We don't know. What time did they call him? Did they call him at 10:15 when Megan called Poncheta Pierce? Did the chauffeur then call Esikoff, or Poncheta call Esikoff? Poncheta gets dressed and comes down, and she's told Nelson Rockefeller had a heart attack. Call the chauffeur. But we don't know why the chauffeur. All Megan had to do, as a newswoman who wrote his speeches, who worked for the Associated Press, who worked for the Vice President of the United States, she knew his name. She knew his condition. All she had to do was pick up a phone. 911. Governor Rockefeller's had a heart attack. She hired the staff. She owned a part of the building next door. Give the address. They were there in 2 minutes. But they had to wait till Poncheta Pierce did it. And these are the threads, these cast of characters, Andrew Hoffman, Mr. Esikoff, Dr. Ernest Esikoff, and the driver, the chauffeur. The chauffeur's name is Lonnie Wilcher, but we haven't seen him at all. They've all taken a powder like the Chappaquiddick women. They just were flown off the island and never seen again, and that was it. And where did they go? Where are these people? That hasn't been answered. And why call Poncheta to get the chauffeur when he never was seen on the premise again? And why not call the 911? Now, the press aide, Hugh Morrow, as I say, covered at the very top. But the police in New York City, a few honest policemen, just like there are a few honest policemen in Germany that revealed about political assassinations that Mr. Gumbel wrote about, they played back the police tape of Megan Marshak calling for aid. They kept that recording. And you see, this is the age of cassettes and recorders. Otherwise, Poncheta Pierce's name would never have come into this murder. It would have been just that Megan was there and he had a heart attack. But they played back the recording and they heard the woman say, Megan, what's the address? And then they had to admit that a woman came down, was notified, saw the body, and left. And she hasn't been interviewed since. And the police picked up another lie. They asked Mr. Umuro, the press aide, about Rockefeller, whether there was a woman present, and he said he didn't know of any woman being there. But he was with Megan Marshak from the time of the hospital when Rocky was dead. At 4 in the morning, he was at her place making their cover stories, but they were lying straight through. And I think the only rationale for the lying, as I say, is that that was a CIA safe house, not only for Rockefeller's personal appointments for oil companies, but it had to be a Defense Department safe house, and that Rocky used it for national security reasons or for foreign dignitaries. He went into that house. He was there frequently, and it was filled with his art objects. And we don't have to guess what kind of a house it was. It didn't have filing cabinets like this house for research. I'm sure that her apartment wasn't filled with the research. But the point is that he did visit over there. But the reason the governor, district attorney, the doctors, the chief medical advisor, and so forth had to cover up, because the mystery of what went on in those three houses and the staff will answer the question of who ordered the murder of Nelson Rockefeller. And incidentally, if Dr. Michael Bodden was in San Diego, I think it's another more interesting story about Dr. Eshakoff, Ernest Eshakoff, because that name made me wonder whether he's Russian or German. And Dr. Eshakoff's from South Africa. He graduated from medical school in Johannesburg in 1952. And he's on the staff of Memorial Hospital and Lenox Hill Hospital. And this is Eshakoff, who phoned Michael Bodden on the telephone when Bodden was not even diagnosing. Nobody suggested pumping his stomach, although the police paramedic said that he had had wine on the table, that he had had wine that night, because evidently he had vomited and was on the couch, but nobody pumped his stomach or checked him for poison. And the doctor who was there, who it seems wasn't his doctor, who said he had a heart condition which justified the early cremation, was not his regular doctor. He came from South Africa, from Johannesburg, to New York City, where he had the important decision to agree to cremate Nelson Rockefeller, a very important man in the United States, and certainly from the time Dr. Eshakoff graduated in 1952. Pardon me, I just sneeze. From the time he graduated in 1952 in Johannesburg, and then came to the United States, it would be interesting to know how he worked his way from a hospital in Johannesburg to a Lenox Hill hospital where someday he's the recipient of the remains of Nelson Rockefeller, and immediately sends it to a mortuary in Westchester County that same night, and then it's cremated on Sunday the next day. Remember how Mr. Paisley was cremated, the CIA man, and we've gone into these early cremations of controversial people like Lee Harvey Oswald and John Paisley recently and Jim Jones. Interesting how quickly Rocky was cremated, a doctor from Johannesburg, South Africa, who's at a hospital where Andrew Hoffman on a walkie-talkie is saying, send him there, 22 blocks away. He's sent to Westchester County, where CIA has, we have a right to know if they have an undertaker up there or handle CIA bodies specifically, like they did with John Paisley's body in Maryland. And then he's cremated a day early. Why a day early? Did somebody want to see the arm? Was there a hole in the sleeve, a needle, like there was in Marilyn Monroe's arm at the time of her autopsy? She wasn't cremated, and there was an autopsy there, and there was a needle mark in her arm. On the politics of women and assassinations, Max Lerner had an article January 31st, right after Rocky was dead, saying that when great men die, we have the right to know all the circumstances. The historian wants the exact details. Of course, he says that, but he doesn't care who killed John Kennedy or Robert or Martin Luther King. But he goes on to say that after Roosevelt died, Franklin Roosevelt died, it took years to find out who was with him, and it was Lucy Mercer, a woman that he had had a love affair with when he was Secretary of the Navy. And he said this was held up for a long time. But there's a new book out now called Dulles by Leonard Mosley, put out by Dial Press. And on page 179 is an Operation Sunrise, and it tells about Alan Dulles working over in Germany with a top German general. No, not he was working in Italy and Switzerland, and he was working with top German officials to get them to defect and come to the United States side, called an end to the war, before Russia, I guess, came all the way to the West and met us halfway. Alan Dulles was making secret dealings with these Germans and Italians from the Allied headquarters, and the United States thought it would be a good idea. And the Soviet Union caught on, and they sent a message to Franklin Roosevelt that, you know, what are you doing? You're betraying us. You weren't going to make secret deals. And Roosevelt sent a message to Moscow, April the 12th, 1975. That was his last communication to Stalin. And he said that he would not go along with this deal, that he would never appease Moscow. And that went out April the 12th, 1945, and Roosevelt was dead that night. One of the reasons for the secrecy and circumstances surrounding Roosevelt's death was always that his Warm Springs, Georgia, with his companion, Lucy Mercer, at that age and that health, I don't think it could have been much of a scandal that he was with Lucy, but because he was with a woman companion, the real story of how Roosevelt died might have been suppressed. I understand that Fala was never seen after that, and there was even a talk that the coffin was never opened, that he was, there was suggested that he was murdered or blown up, and that was hushed up. And the reason it was hushed up was because of a woman. And now we look back and study history, and it could have been because he was not going to betray Moscow. The tape has run out again too fast. I'm sorry, and we'll have to wait till next week. I'll be with you next week and more on Rocky.